Okay, we're back for episode 146. Joe, how you doing?
Well, I'm locked down, vaccinated, chipped, maintaining social distance, and I'm just happy for all my freedoms.
So you're Bill Gates certified?
Bill Gates is here with me, and yeah, he's about to write my certificate as soon as we can get this chip to work underneath my my palm.
Well, it's nice. It's nice to know that Bill Gates is looking over everyone's shoulder, making sure that we're all being good little citizens. We're healthy.
Isn't it wonderful? You know, he cares about us, and he's here to help.
Now, of course, this Bill Gates is getting a lot of press because, as the globe's guru and sage of all things, of course he predicted this a pandemic. Amazingly, it's one of these amazing coincidences we see in history, where he not only did he predict it, he wargamed it with his Gates-funded Event 201. But before we get into Gates, of course, this week in the COVID-19 drama that is being played out before our eyes, they walked it back a bit. Dr. Anthony Fauci, El Duce, now says the COVID death rates for the year will probably be below 60,000. That's down from a 2.2 million estimate, from a 200,000 estimate to 100,000 estimate. Of course, he cites measures that were implemented. So they've saved the day with shutting down the economy and imposing social distancing and these things. Of course, if you follow the data, that's a false claim because they knew, the World Health Organization knew going into this from the data from China, that those numbers were false. The UK report, the Imperial College report, it was all based on cooked up numbers, and we were seeing a lot of that, them playing games with death certificates and the test itself, 80% false positive, it's presumed COVID 19 cases. So there's a lot of games going on, being played here. The mortality rate, we see no excess mortality rate this year, even in the worst places like Italy. I think in the UK, the death rate from pneumonia, from respiratory illnesses, is actually lower this year than it was last year. So there is no spike in any of these things. In Italy, actually, for the months of January through March, they actually had less deaths this year overall than the year before. So that's interesting. We found out in Italy that 88% of COVID-19 deaths were misattributed, as much as 88%, maybe more than that. And 99% of the fatalities were people with comorbidity, underlying medical conditions. So it's getting to look like just a one big hoax or operation. If there was an interesting comment I read. Here's first in California, your state. There's an article: California toughened stay-at-home rules as coronavirus cases top 20,000. We're supposed to think that's a big number. Although California, here we go. California toughened stay-at-home rules as coronavirus cases top 20,000. California has reached another milestone in the coronavirus battle as the number of confirmed cases, of course we know that's a problem, soared past 20,000 and the state prepared for a weekend of unprecedented restrictions, including efforts to keep people at home during Easter. Sweeping rules limiting people's movement have already been imposed statewide, but officials have added new restrictions in desperate bid to show the viruses, to slow the virus's spread. Being safe means safe at home for the next few weeks to come, Los Angeles County Public Health Director Barbara Ferraris said Thursday. Everything we can do to avoid having to be in contact with other people is a really good idea. Beginning Friday, a new order requires Los Angeles residents to wear masks when they go shopping and then do other essential trips. The order also requires many essential workers to wear masks. Beverly Hills went a step further, ordering residents on Thursday to wear face coverings whenever they leave their home, including for walks through the neighborhood, I mean, just by yourself. Under the order, drivers traveling alone or with other members of their households, how do they know that, do not need to wear face coverings unless they lower their vehicle's windows for any reason. So when they wind the window down, you got to put the mask on, including to interact with first responders. So basically, I don't know, if you're in a car accident and you're mortally wounded or something, you got to make sure you put your mask on. Food service workers or others who are not members of their household. Community is also imposing new rules designed to prevent Easter gatherings where the virus could spread. I just found out in Kentucky, This is how crazy it's gotten. Kentucky, the government will record license plates of those who show up at any mass gatherings, such as church services, and provide that info to local health departments, who will in turn order those individuals to be quarantined for 14 days. That's from the governor, Andy Beshear. I don't think that's really legal. So this is the insanity. Of course, you know, well, you know, we have 18,000 deaths in the United States, 500,000 cases, supposedly. Again, that's from this test that aren't reliable. In fact, the test kit itself, the manufacturer of it, says the test should not be used for purposes of diagnosis, only for research, laboratory research. So they're breaking the label of the very product they're using when they're using to diagnose these people, because it's unreliable. It said 80%, as much as a false positive as high as 80%. California, where I was just reading about, they report 20,917 cases and 571 deaths. The annual flu usually takes about anywhere between 6,500 and 7,500 lives in California. So this is the insanity we're forced to tolerate. You know, it's something out of a Terry Gilliam film. It's like Brazil.
Yeah, a very bad Monty Python movie. That's a good description of it. Let's see, like about 3 weeks ago, I think maybe actually more now, the governor, Gavin Newsom, the person who comes from the Getty Oil, Pelosi, Brown crime syndicate families, you know, he said there's going to be between 20 and 25 million Californians, mm-hmm. the disease, in 2 months. So, man, a lot of people have got to get sick really quick.
He's got to make up about 24 million, 25 million people then, doesn't he? Between now and...
Yeah, that's right. Now, here in the Tri-Counties, rather, which they call them the Tri-Counties. Oh, gee. Maybe 1,400,000 people. And there's less than 700 who have tested positive. Out of that, there's nobodies. However, they're all as having underlying medical. So this comorbidity phenomenon, or if you're dying of brain cancer and collapse, they test you to see if you have the virus. But it's very, very telling, because no one who was basically a healthy person who supposedly came down with COVID-19 has perished. Not a single one. We got 1.5 million people here. We're almost a month in, and there's been no real deaths. Not a single one you can attribute. So,
and there's been a curious drop in pneumonia deaths, right?
Yeah, I haven't actually seen that. They haven't brought that data out for California, but I'm sure it will appear if there's enough COVID deaths to even make up a significant fraction of pneumonia deaths. Because right now the thing is just really much a complete dud here in California. Like you say, there's 20,000. I mean, Tim, we've got like 35 million people. I mean, you know, 20,000, that's you know, like a bad like hangover in San Francisco on Sunday morning.
And the headline is surges past 20,000.
Yeah, surges past. I mean, 20,000 is just nothing. So anyway, the question is, of course, is when will reality start to overtake the propaganda? Because, you know, I'm sure you've seen all of the people who've gone around and they've filmed the hospitals that are claimed to be these war zones, and they show there's no one in them at all, basically. They're empty.
Yeah, they're laying off people now because they've shut down all of normal operations.
Right. And then you have the thing that, well, do you know anyone who's sick? I mean, I don't know if you've ever been in an epidemic situation. I was in one in South America in the 1970s. And I'm telling you, you know lots of people who are sick. You see, it's very serious. This is just ridiculous. You know, it's just ridiculous. There just isn't enough, infection to really kind of terrorize anyone. And so the question is, well, how long will the propaganda go? What they're relying on now is the the sophistry of, well, we prevented the death. That's
why. Yeah. Now it's a narrative control.
Right. So now you have to disprove the negative. You know, it's like, gee, well, there aren't any deaths, but I don't know how I'm going to, how can I prove that you weren't the one that did, that brought about the non-existence of a death, you know?
Yeah, there was a, in the 1950s, there was a cult, a lady, Ramsey Paul shared this story on his, one of his videos. And there was a lady in the early 50s who claimed that she was a conduit for aliens, and she'd write. And the aliens would speak through her handwriting. And she predicted the end of the world would come on a certain date in 1954. And some people, you know, joined her cult, and she was writing the warnings and prepare and these things. And if those who prepared would be taken up to the mothership, and those who didn't would perish with the destruction of the planet. And so a few, a few joined her cult, and they gave, they left their spouses, they quit their jobs, sold all their possessions and these things, and they waited for the date. And when midnight struck, nothing happened. And then she said, well, maybe it's not midnight, midnight somewhere else. So this wait of an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. Finally, the next day came and went, and said, well, what happened? And then she started writing again. And she said, well, it's because so many people believed it was going to happen. It didn't happen. And so this is a similar type of logical fallacy or fallacy.
Yeah, and since the public, I mean, I would like to be charitable here. But I'm not going to be. We have just become a nation of idiots. I mean, just absolute idiots. I don't know what it was really like, you know, in the 19th century. I'm old, but, you know, not there. But we have gotten just significantly more stupid and also more cowardly.
The fear of death, I think.
When we go into Gates, we can talk about how they were able to achieve all this, but
Being averse to risk, and acknowledging the reality of risk in these things in life.
And of course the desire to be free, right, which is a, kind of a symptom of a strong psychology, strong physiology, right? You know, don't want to be chained down. I'm strong. I want to be my own person. That's just not something that people are even thinking about. I mean, you know, you just sit there in these lines to go into the grocery stores to get your ration, and you have to maintain these 6-foot spans, and the people in front and back are covered with gloves and masks and, you know, ropes and whatnot. And I mean, it's preposterous.
Yeah, I was in traffic today and I saw someone driving with a mask on.
Yeah.
An elderly, overweight lady. And I saw her pull her mask down, take a few puffs out of her cigarette.
Well, there you have it. So, there's a lot that goes into the capacity to lock down a population, and the population has to be kind of incapable of fighting back, and this is where we've been taken now. There will be a moment, and I think that everyone in the alt media should try to focus on this. When the absurdity becomes clear and everyone can see that the virus was a dud, now, at that point, how do you transition the people who were victimized, who were trapped in their houses, who lost their freedom, probably had, you know, significant loss of wealth. Are you there, Tim?
Yes.
How do you transition the awareness that they were played into a rebellion against the political class?
There has to be an accounting for this, because if there isn't an accounting, the precedents that have been established with this means it's just going to be further lockdowns. You know, regionally or something.
So we have to try to focus on a very strong reaction.
Well, it's control of the narrative, which is important, because right now they're starting to walk it back because the numbers aren't there, and they're trying to take a victory lap saying we're getting better because of what we did. And that's absurd, as we pointed out. I noticed that this past week that Tucker Carlson made a non mea culpa on his own show, his editorial, because he's one that was, you know, apparently encouraged Donald Trump to support the various lockdowns. Is he said that now we have to stop worrying about not being such doomsayers, and now that we have it under control, worry about rebuilding and reawakening the economy. You see, he's lending legitimacy to the whole operation, which needs to be denied to them, because we have to really point out the whole hoax, whole fraud of this thing. Because if we don't, we give the system more legitimacy, the same way that 9/11 did. Ironically, in a sense, because all the propaganda. So we can't let them get away with that.
Exactly. And so, and this, of course, you know, presupposes that they're going to let us out of our houses ever.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because there's different ways they can play it. And now that they've, you know, basically made the move, you know, this might be the time when they go, you know, we can't let them out. We just have to constantly keep them terrorized. And so we need to bring out, you know, COVID 911, you know, more severe kind of biological weapon or something, and also use the National Guard, foment violence from the citizens, so that then we can, you know, justify machine gunning crowds, and that'll keep them in their houses, and then just starve them out and see what happens, you know.
Yeah, because COVID 20, just when you thought it was safe to leave your house, the sequel.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's because there hasn't been any response. They may be tempted to try to that maneuver with the idea that if they let us out, we might start thinking. So who knows?
Yeah, I know the White House has to lead the way on you know, ending the lockdown in May, and we hear talk in the press. But the problem is, you have 50 governors out there and countless little tyrannical mayors that have really taken this crisis, really exploited this crisis, not let it go to waste. And they themselves have imposed themselves little dictators, and in pronouncing edicts and fines and threats of imprisonment without any backing of law or legislation, because it's all an emergency. And how do you walk those people back? How do you deal with a Newsom or a Cuomo or, you know, the many, you know, boneheaded mayors that are out there? That, you know, they're dumb, but they're evil and they're dangerous.
Well, and also, how do you reestablish the rule of law? Because here in California, I think it's 40% of renters are not paying, and leaseholders are not paying this month their rent. And there's no recourse if you're an impoverished landlord. The sheriff won't even come out and basically, force an eviction if you have the legal right to create one, because there isn't a rule of law. Beyond all this, the courts are shut down. I mean, I'm not sure in Santa Barbara, I'm not really sure what courtroom proceedings are going on at this point. The county office looks totally shut down when I drove by it.
Yes.
So now the question is, well, what is the rule of law at this point? I mean, I guess it's CNN and Bill Gates, because they're the only ones who are making legal, you know, proclamations.
Well, what's going to happen is at some point these will become distressed properties, and they'll be bought for cheap by Berkshire Hathaway or something. And they'll become the landlord. They'll be further concentration. At least that's what occurred in 2008. So.
Yeah, and that would be, like, to me, that would be almost the sunshine scenario.
Yeah.
Because that implies that they even care about owning property, because there's enough population to fill them up. Mm-hmm. You know, I mentioned, like 3 weeks ago that you know, I am worried about black and worse cases here. And, you know, you look at the Georgia Guidestones like I do, which is sort of their kind of mission statement. It's a bad situation, because if they really want to get the world's population down to 500 million, this would be tempting. I mean, I think under just kind of, if they just let the economy continue to disintegrate and they keep us locked down for another month, maybe a month and a half, you're going to start to have damage to the food chain.
Yeah.
We talked before about how, the chemicals you need to make the Hostess Twinkies, they come from all over the industrial plants. And when you start losing these certain components along the way, I mean, and I'm being facetious, but imagine even with like farmland, I mean, they need chemicals to for the green revolution, toxic produce that they come up with, the feedlots with the, you know, crazed cattle, you know, and all those drugs. I mean, you know, everything requires economic movement to keep the food chain going, such as the food chain is. Very, very few people have any access to organic food, right? Mm-hmm. How percentage of the United States does. So the population that lives on corn chips and this kind of stuff, they are really at risk right now. Because if you look at the system of the food chain, you take out a few key components along the way because of lack of employment, and then what are you going to do? I was listening to this one guy in Australia saying the fruit is picked by, they're called backpackers. Mm-hmm. These are Australians that will go, you know, they're hardy young Australians. They go into the fruit orchards, and then after they work for 3 or 4 months, then they go on these treks, right, with the cash that they've been able to get by doing the work. Well, now he's saying the farmers are reporting to him that there's no one there to pick the fruit. No one's there because they can't travel around. So you see, it's an example of, yes, you take out an element, and then, you know, months later, then suddenly, you know, you don't have the actual, you know, food to supply people with. I just think that's almost it baked in the cake.
And when there's a bread riot or a shortage, the mob isn't going to go after the mayor or the governor that imposed these things. They'll loot stores to make the situation worse. Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be like a zombie apocalypse movie. I mean, they'll be starved and sick, and
all this for, again, bottom line, all this for what seems to be a moderate to severe flu season.
Tim, like I was saying, we've got 1.5 million people here. We haven't had a fatality.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got like 700 people who've had it. Because I'll tell you, they you know, the data is very rich. And I was going to, this is like one hopeful aspect, is I think the local data is what you want to focus on, because, and particularly small hospitals, mm-hmm, because it's a lot harder to fake those data. You know, the big New York, you know, the mass grave situation, yeah, you know, that's pretty easy to do because you have such a huge environment, so many hospitals. It's very difficult for like the public to get accurate data when they amalgamate all of this stuff, right? They clump together different hospitals. Who's going to go around and check every single, you know, point of data? Well, here in Santa Barbara, we have one big hospital, Cottage. And I think that most of the people on the staff are not, you know, New World Order automatons. And so they just come out with a number. And you get to see every single day how many people tested positive for this thing, supposedly, how many people are in the ICU, how many people died. And it's the same throughout the tri-counties. You know, I don't know how many hospitals, maybe 6 or 7. So there's very hard to fake the data in a big way. They might be able to fudge it, you know, a death here or there, but they couldn't really fudge it too far because there would be, I think, whistleblowers that would, you know, cause trouble for that. So the data here just makes the lockdown seem absolutely absurd because there just isn't any fatalities. And we have like 17 people in the ICU, which is down from like a week ago when there was 19. But moreover, you know, they don't release this data until if they perish, they do. But you know that these people are comorbidity, mm-hmm, right? The people in the ICUs are their old, you know, gasping people, or people who were, you know, smokers that were emphysemic. You know, there's all sorts of reasons. You know, so there just hasn't been yet a healthy person struck down.
And the only difference
the
only difference between this year and last year is that this year people aren't allowed to work, but the, I mean, you're seeing the unemployment. You know, you hear a report like unemployment claims jump.
Go outside.
Well, yeah, because people, you've made it illegal to work, so unemployment numbers are going to go up and claims are going to go up. You know, there's not, I mean, you see the, you know, who's responsible for that? If you make it illegal for people to work, the unemployment numbers will go up and you have increased claims.
Right. So And of course, they're spending trillions of dollars. They will supplement the capital that's missing from economic activity with invented money. I don't know what they're up to now.
Finance is not work. It's not productive work. It's not it's not bringing bread to market or eggs to market or whatever, food to market. Not building things. Not maintaining the infrastructure. So you just can't print. You can't print prosperity. You can use it to steal it. You can use it to redistribute wealth, which they do. What's going on is the big picture here, is the huge the big heist that they've achieved.
Yeah, but the problem to me is that when you replace labor with financialization, labor and service and goods with financialization, you end up with money that isn't worth anything.
Yes, ultimately, yeah.
What is it relating to? And so they will. So what I see is happening is that they are basically destroying the dollar, and I think this is deliberate. Yeah. Everything in the operation is deliberate. And this is just part of our slavery, is that, there won't be a currency because they'll have to basically reset, some kind of global currency.
You see that with Lagarde talking about how dirty currency is. And, now we have to move to cryptocurrency or digital currency, which is then one step, removed from social credit system and all that, where you can't save anything. And this all goes to that smart stuff. We'll get in our Bill Gates conversation about that. It's about the technocracy he wants to, unleash under the cover of public health. But, this whole thing about the assault on money, as if currency and money and cash is some sort of vector for disease, as if we don't touch anything else like doorknobs or each other or things like, why cash? I mean, to me, it's so obvious that they pinpoint cash.
They want to get rid of cash because then the government can basically verify everything and control everything.
Yes.
It's like you haven't got your vaccination.
What about doorknobs? They ban doorknobs?
We can't process this visa action because you violated code 17 in terms of your update for your yellow fever vaccination. Yeah.
There was a interesting comment that I read in an article that I think kind of sum up the whole thing here, is at least to date what's going on. It was, watching today's daily White House press conference clearly shows what a protein entity this phony coronavirus crisis is. The constant allusions to studies, models, graphs, mitigations, and other propagandistic weapons shows just how ridiculous this whole pandemic narrative is. A week ago, we were on the verge of millions perishing before our eyes in what we were told could be the darkest week in the history of humanity.
Right.
A short paradigm shift is now...
This week is supposed to be the dark week.
It says, but a short paradigm shift is now upon us, as though the strategic aims of 311 are here to stay. When the language changes, then the objective changes will follow with it. Now, all of a sudden, things aren't so bad. The early models and estimates were slightly off, and the numbers of the sick and dead are starting to slow to a manageable rate, where we can focus on bringing our economy back. The tens of thousands of ventilators, masks, and other personal property equipment that were needed so badly last week can now be used for storage, distributed to other states, or sold to foreign countries. Just listening to Trump talk about how millions more people would be dead on the streets and subways had we not all been ordered to stay in place. Even the tense to his language has changed, which is an indicator that they are going to pull us out of this stage, if you will, and transition us to the next. Even on a couple of answers to reporters, Trump was talking like the pandemic was over and that we just need to move on. Now we will start to see the cautiously optimistic approach as we start to allow people to come out of their homes and businesses to reopen. The focus now will be on the vaccines and the new laws to prevent this from ever happening again. But the pandemic crisis, just like the war on terror, is here to stay as the totalitarian medical police state becomes even more apparent.
Yeah, well said. And the fact is that one valuable thing in terms of the claims that all of the draconian, unconstitutional, and crazy-making fascism that we've been suffering with was valuable, is that there are areas that didn't do those things. Mm-hmm. Brazil, Sweden, and Mexico. Mexico is fantastic. They tried, and they just couldn't.
No compliance.
They just weren't interested in it. And so you see these pictures of like crowds of people just behaving normally. And the important thing is that now Eventually, there will be a tiny fraction of the press and the media who will then start to look at that data and compare it against ours, and they will reach this horrifying vision where there isn't any difference, that the mortality rates in Sweden aren't going to be any different than the ones in Norway or Germany, and or in general across Europe. And so all of this lockdown stuff will become basically exposed as unnecessary. Now, at that moment, you will start to realize the absolute horror of life without an economy. Mm-hmm. And God, I hope that the combination of those two facts will wake up some of these blind individuals who have been sadly just conditioned into a kind of insentient being status, right, where they just do what they see on their smartphones. And you know, that's how they go through life. And like I was telling you before we went on the air, it's been a rough week for me because I've been speaking out in public places. I just won't put up with it. And so I've, you know, just basically said, look, I'm not afraid of the virus. I'm afraid of the government. You know, why don't you people look at the data? You know, and I've been asked, well, you know, made to leave. And you know what? This is just like me at parties. I've kind of taken the same thing. The question is just how long will it be before I'm asked to leave? Because I would rather have that social life, right, than to just sit there and listen to the nonsense and now to actually witness basically thought puppets, you know? People, humanity turned into thought puppets. And so it's just too painful to sit there and just go along with it. And so family members are not thrilled by my behavior. They don't like to make scenes. I don't really either. I mean, I'm not opposed to it, but I'm not something I would seek out. But I just couldn't live with myself if I didn't. And so I go to the grocery store by myself now. I go to get the takeout food by myself because I'm unpredictable. In fact, I'm very predictable. If there's an opportunity, I will try to raise my voice so the people who are within social, you know, of my words will like realize that there's someone.
Let's try to reconnect.
Your audio is funny to speak up whenever they can. I mean, don't get arrested unless you're prepared for that. But for heaven's sakes, don't let opportunities go by to kind of see if you can connect to something that is still human inside the thought puppets. I mean, what do we have to lose at this point? You know, we need to go for broke.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Bill Gates tonight.
Yeah, Bill Gates.
Bill Gates, he's a big part of this, I think, because he gamed it with his event 201 and is predicting it for years. He's been looking forward to this for years, apparently. Of course, the actual quote pandemic unquote is nowhere near the numbers that his scenario foresaw, 67 million dead or something globally. But nevertheless, the economic impact because of the lockdown is as bad as some of those scenarios play out. That was they created the economic implosion. It wasn't the virus that did that. But Bill Gates, William Henry Gates, he was born October 28th, 1955. Of course, he's an American business magnate, software developer, investor, and philanthropist. Best known as the co-founder of Microsoft Corporation. During his career at Microsoft, Gates held the position of chairman, chief executive officer, president, and chief software architect, also being the largest individual shareholder until May 2014. He's one of the best-known entrepreneurs and pioneers of the microcomputer revolution of the 1970s and 1980s. Born and raised in Seattle, Washington, Gates co-founded Microsoft with childhood friend Paul Allen in 1975 in Albuquerque, New Mexico. It went on to become the world's largest personal computer software company. Gates led the company as chairman and CEO until stepping down as CEO in January 2000, but he remained chairman and became chief software architect. In June 2006, Gates announced that he would be transitioning to a part-time role at Microsoft and full-time work at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the private charitable foundation that he and his wife, Melinda Gates, established in 2000. He stepped down as chairman of Microsoft in February 2014 and assumed a new post as technology advisor to support the new appointed CEO. Since 1987, he has been included in Forbes' list of the world's wealthiest documented individuals. From 1995 to 2017, he held Forbes' title of the richest person in the world all but four of those years. In October 2017, he was surpassed by Amazon founder and CEO Jeff Bezos, who had an estimated net worth of $90.6 billion compared to Gates' net worth of $89.9 billion at the time. As of November 9th, 2019, Gates had an estimated net worth of $107.1 billion, making him the second wealthiest person in the world behind Mr. Bezos. Later in his career, and since leaving day-to-day operations at Microsoft in 2008, Gates pursued a number of philanthropic endeavors. He donated large amounts of money to various charitable organizations and scientific research programs through the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, reported to be the world's largest private charity. In 2009, Gates and Warren Buffett founded the Giving Pledge, whereby they and other billionaires pledged to give at least half their wealth to philanthropy. So Bill Gates, quite the philanthropist. He dedicated the improvement of mankind. What problem do you have with what problems do you have with Bill Gates, Joe?
Well, I mean, he's just an unspeakable lump of evil. That's one of my problems. You can really see Gates clearly and see what he is in context. He's hard to pin down. He's a slippery little thing, you know, in his language. If you hear him talking, he's has this kind of cheerful, sophomoric, wordplay when he's describing a genocide, basically. Robert Kennedy Jr. had a tweet that called him out on a lot of the African vaccine damage he's done, which was, I think, you know, kind of a like it was good to see Gates actually in public get noticed like that. To really understand Gates, understand who he is, what he is, you have to look at it in context. And it's hard to know exactly where to establish the context. I think the best place, I would think, or at least for me, is like with IBM. You had Watson, who was the chairman. He was a Freemason and a Bohemian Grove member. He is kind of well known as the part of the American industrial class that helped Hitler. Right. There's evidence, actually admitted evidence that Watson developed a system of identification of German Jews. Right. And so Watson has been pillared for that. But this is very much, in my mind, the same kind of distraction and camouflage that is applied to, you know, Prescott Bush and Averill Harriman and the group that supplied money to him. Because when you look at those guys in context, you can see that they are working with an organization that is creating Hitler, which is not disclosed.
Yeah, it creates the illusion, or at least the narrative, that the bad guys lost in World War II and the good guys won. And it's not quite that simple, is it?
And so what I would say is that, in fact, what Watson was doing was identifying the Jews because they were going to basically be used to establish the state of Israel, and so it was the Zionists who were interested in actually getting this data. It wasn't the Nazis. The Nazis at the exact time had signed the Havara Agreement, you know, whereby they were going to produce lots of German Jews for settlement in Israel. And I can actually give a real point of evidence to this, this assertion, because there are several photographs of Watson with Hitler, right? But guess who's with him at the table discussing, what to do? Alfred Balfour, the guy who wrote the Balfour Declaration to Rothschild to establish the state of Israel. So that, I think, kind of gives you an understanding of IBM. IBM goes forward, and then Opel is the guy who actually meets with Gates. I mean, he's a CFR guy, Council of Foreign Relations. That pretty well gives him his identification. And now if you look in Gates' background, you have his mother, Maxwell is her name. Her family owned the Seattle, first National Citibank of Seattle, which was the Federal Reserve Bank of that region. Okay, they are the Federal Reserve. Her grandfather, her father were both the president of this bank. This bank could actually print money, kind of an amusing thing. There is actually a collector's market for U.S. currency that they printed, because they were at that time between like 1917, I don't know when, 1930, the individual banks had the power to actually create currency. The Federal Reserve banks could. And so some of them created these unique dollars, which are now collector's items because there are not that many left. But anyway, this bank, so this is on one side of Gates' family. On the other, his father look at the photographs of him with his good friends, Soros, Rockefeller, Bush. I mean, he just travels in the very worst circles. Freemason, of course. But
Joe, I thought Bill Gates started his company in a garage and came from nothing.
It was in a garage, except for the fact that his grandfather had established a trust fund for the little genius of over $1 million. So when Gates dropped out of Harvard, he was already a millionaire, right? He had a trust fund. So the whole thing is absurd. Now, to try to like position Gates, you have to go back one step and look at like from Norbert Wiener forward, with Norbert Wiener and the cybernetics group of the Macy Conference, the American Jewish Committee guys are there, and they're talking about coding and programming humans. They then have a next iteration of all of these guys who basically wanted to create this is the personal computer guys. They were all basically adherents of Norbert Wiener. And so what happens is that they then, out of the SRI, primarily the Stanford Research Institute, which was the headquarters of MKUltra, this group then basically following Norbert's idea about coding humans, went about designing the personal computer as the device to implement this. They met with and lived with, right, basically the so-called communal group, which was the MKUltra group, right, that Stuart Brand was part of. This was like the Whole Earth Catalog and all of these guys. They all lived together. It was just one big happy family. The people who are designing the personal computer and the people who are basically setting up the sex, drugs, and rock and roll culture. So now they had, as a coming out party sort of, you had the two groups they gave this the mother of all demos. I don't know if you've heard about this, but this is where they actually introduced the internet. And filming it was, of course, Stuart Brand, the Merry Prankster. You also had, all of the guys who and the technology that they developed, like the computer mouse. And most importantly, at this event, the internet was brought out. So the internet was actually demonstrated at this 1968. It was called the Mother of All Demos, December 9th. And basically, one of the hubs of the DARPA-funded was the SRI. So you had, from the very start, you had basically this MKUltra aspect. Because at the same time this is going on, Willis Harriman is writing The Changing Images of Man, We're Going to Change, All Right. And at the same time, he's doing like low frequency experimentation on humans, which was completely illegal. And Navy tried to shut him down. But the SRI guys just were above all this and they just kept going with it. So anyway, you have the internet brought out at this point. And now the project and also the concept of like the cyberspace, the idea that the humans will live in a new world, will be advanced and evolved, and we'll be living in the cyberspace. Anyway, so this is the background. This is the background that Gates, comes into when he's a high school student at Lakeside. And incredibly, they somehow had access, because of a bake sale, to a teletype machine that was hooked up to a computer. The thing wasn't that expensive, about $1,000. It was $40 an hour, though, to get onto the computer. So they had to sell a lot of cookies, it looks like. But anyway, so Gates then, as a young kid, is being trained, particularly in BASIC, which is what you could code on this teletype computer terminal. It was a model ASR33. And so this is how Gates then, he comes into the situation where he meets Opal, and they have this fatal meeting. Now, the relationship that is established is what is really going on is they know perfectly well what they want to do with the personal computer. They bring Gates and Steve Jobs on because they have to. They know that the personal computer is going to be the programming element for the baby boomer. So they didn't want to use like Xerox and IBM as the only source for these things, because they thought there'd be far less resistance if they had people of their own age. And so this is the only reason that you had this IBM give away the ability to sell the operating system to other companies.
Is this avoid antitrust, maybe?
Oh, IBM could care less about this. I actually know a lot about this, Eric, because I was in the computer software business.
But it's a fake story that Gates, he didn't outsmart IBM. Gates was set up by IBM to...
Of course. The deal was just ridiculous. And here's how bad the deal is.
Well, Watson was good friends with his mother, right?
No, it was Opal.
Opal, okay, that's what it was. Okay.
Opal and his mom were a United Way, and according to story, which is just completely preposterous, she said that you should meet my son and give small businesses a chance. Look, I knew IBM. I was actually involved in trying to get information about an operating system at this exact time from IBM. I can just guarantee you that there is no desire on the part of IBM to create healthy competition. And the deal was just crazy. It not only gave Gates money for an operating system which he hadn't even written, but they gave him $700,000 to help just grease the skids to get going. Now
this was DOS, right?
Yeah, for DOS. Now yeah. Gates is seen as this computer genius. It's part of what makes us take him seriously as a vaccine czar. Well, look. The first product that Microsoft had, they had like it was an emulator. It ran a BASIC, so you could code in BASIC on a particular machine. He didn't write it. They paid. He and Alan paid this guy Davidoff to write the thing. Okay, it's well known. It's documented. Now with DOS, when he made the deal with IBM, which incidentally just sealed IBM's fate. I mean, because now they were going to be able to sell the personal computer, but the whole operating system they wouldn't have any control over. Anyone who wanted, which is what happened, right? Suddenly you have Dell and all these people with mm-hmm. the DOS system, and everyone is using it. And IBM's not getting any revenue. Well, the fact is that the operating system had not been written at the time of the agreement, and When Gates said, "Well, I need to have an operating system because I just sold it to IBM for $700,000."
Yeah, that's securities fraud, isn't it?
Well, yeah, of course. But what they did was they hired this guy to write one, and what he did was, but this is where it gets funny, because what he did is he went and simply copied, basically. He said, "Well, I wanted the operating system to be able to work with lots of operating systems, so I just found a good one." And basically, I copied it, and then I changed it a little bit. And so the guy who actually wrote DOS is this guy Neufeld. He tried to sue, but at that time you didn't have a lot of kind of clarity legally as to, you know, what software copying was. But I mean, he so it was called when Gates got it was called Q D operating system. It was called QDOS. That was how it was first brought to the world, and that stood for Quick and Dirty Operating System. That was actually what it was called. It became DOS, which they left the dirty in there, but it was quick and dirty. Okay, so then now it goes forward, and Gates is a genius, and he's selling these things like crazy. The other company, which again, it just kind of helps frame Gates so you can see who he is that the exact same thing happened with Apple. This is not as well known as Gates, but Apple was, you know, they had like kind of an interesting computer, and I looked at it, but it was a toy. Gates was actually working with American businesses, right? The IBM personal computer was really just like a desktop computer. That's where people were using it with business. But for the masses, the thing that becomes a smartphone was the Macintosh or the Apple. Now, amazingly, the exact same thing happened with Apple. They didn't have any really good software, but Xerox had the guy who and the team. Remember, I talked about the mother of all demos, where they had all of that stuff, the Ethernet, bitmap graphics, GUI stuff that you won't know. But this was the really cool stuff that the Macintosh had. Xerox said, you know, we just can't. We don't know what to do with it. So why don't you take it? We'll take it. And so now, in that little collection was one very, very cool thing. We call it the mouse, right? They just basically gave this to these garage upstarts. I mean, they actually had a real business. They had Apple II. It wasn't a great computer. But when they got this basically gift of the technology that was then going to suck in all of the individuals, right, in our generation who started to become addicted to computer use, these are the things that did it. The mouse, the Ethernet, in particular, like things like bitmap graphics. You don't even know what this stuff is, but it's like it's the toolbar. You know, it's the way that like ordinary people can like write little programs and things. It was all of the stuff that people got infatuated with, and it was all of the stuff that addicted us to the computer. So this was the trajectory. You had the, you know, grandson of the Federal Reserve Bank owner, whose father is Planned Parenthood Freemason, friend of George Soros. Get a sweetheart deal from the Council of Foreign Relation guy, Opal, and then is paid $700,000 for vaporware for nothing, so that then they can basically bring out this operating system, which IBM isn't even upset about them selling to everyone else in the world, right? And suddenly their stock is worth as much as IBM. So what you've had was is you've just had a planned structure. You can really see it when you actually look at how the development, the MK Ultra guys at SRI, you know, with the mouse, with the Ethernet, with the internet, right? With all of the graphics, everything to seduce people into using it, then that dovetails with these new companies that are coming out, you know, with Microsoft, and then finally with Apple. And so, you know, it's incremental. You have IBM and Xerox, then you have Gates. He's young, he's sort of nerdy, but he's kind of hip looking, he's kind of fun. And then you have Jobs. And remember, Jobs is famous for LSD use. And then you have the Macintosh, and that takes us right up to you know, the iPhone.
Yeah, I mean, they present two different images. One is the quirky nerd, and the cool Steven Jobs, right? So what's the I mean, so these are characters that are created like a Betty Crocker or a Ronald McDonald for a product. And you look at like corporations like Xerox or IBM, they give away this very valuable technology, but they give it away to these young guys. This presents a certain image of the industry to the public as a sort of these young Turks establishing, you know, going after these old and gray corporations. And so it's very appealing from a marketing standpoint. It's a good narrative, an attractive legend to these characters. But they all have connections. Like I said, you know, Bill Gates' mother, good friends with Opal, IBM, Federal Reserve Bank, National City Bank, and these people. So they didn't come from nothing. They come from a privilege. They had a $1 million trust fund. And so, I mean, if you look at a company like Apple or Microsoft and its relation to IBM or Xerox and these corporations and how they function, is you can look at corporations sort of like nation states where they become shells or tools of the oligarchs, and the corporations themselves can, you know, can be brought down, can be absorbed, even bankrupted, as new corporations spring up, which are again instrumentalized for the objective of these oligarchs, which is world control and mind control. And but this whole story is created, so now we have this false image. And at the same time, someone like a Gates is put out there as, so because he's so successful in business, he's such a, you know, smart guy writing code, he should be able to, you know, be a guru and offer advice to how humanity should be governed in the, you know, in the next decade or next century.
Yeah, but the problem is, of course, as you look at his participation in the vaccine programs, mm-hmm. and the Green Revolution, I was really happy to see Bobby Kennedy call him out with that tweet. I don't know if you saw it, but he really went after him, and he just said, look, you know, Gates basically, you know, sterilized and killed like millions of people.
Yeah, what they call their free vaccine program is a testing program. They're using people in Africa and in Asia and Latin America as sort of guinea pigs for these vaccines.
Yeah, and of course he denied it. And in 2014, the Kenya's Catholic Doctor Association, they accused him. Right, who was administering Gates' vaccine of chemistry sterilization.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, who at first denied it? They said, oh, we never have done any of this. But independent labs found the sterility formula in every vaccine tested.
Is that the HGC hormone that causes women to...
Yes, and after denying the charges, then who finally admitted after, I guess, legal action that it had been developing the sterility vaccine.
Now, why isn't there any criminal...
I mean, this is like literally it's on the scale of the Bolsheviks. I mean, this is how what I call Gates a lump of evil. You know, he never basically was called to task for the you know, the Tanzania, the Nicaragua, Mexican, Philippines, Kenyan, all of these areas where they did these experimental vaccines on millions of people, right? That ended up sterile. And then you have to look at this in context, because now how credible is Gates's claim that, well, we were trying our best, you know, we just did everything we could. And, you know, it's just really tough sometimes. Gee, golly whiz. Well, wait a second, Bill. What was your dad? Wasn't he the head of Planned Parenthood? Right? I mean, how likely is that person to be someone who is accidentally sterilizing all of the third world?
Well, at one breath, he talks about empowering the poor of the third world. The next breath, he talks about drastically reducing their numbers. So which is it?
Well, I mean, it's both.
In his mind, it is, because he'll use that language, because he'll talk about, well, you know, if we improve economics and add economic development, you know, we can reduce the population 10 to 15% with our vaccine programs. And they'll say, well, he's talking about when people get wealthier, they have less kids. And that's a good cope, I suppose, or excuse. But no, if you look at the sterilization programs that he's been involved in, I think it's obvious it's not
that. Remember polio? You know. I mean, remember they said that Gates, he personally takes control of these things, supposedly, mm-hmm. right? And he took control of India's National Advisory Board and you know, by controlling the board through you know, money. And they mandated 50 polio vaccines, up mm-hmm. to five for every kid before age five. And now you had, you know, a devastating vaccine-strain polio epidemic that paralyzed 500,000 children. I mean, this is, you know, I actually haven't vetted this fact, but I know that Robert Kennedy is pretty careful, and I don't think he would make this public statement if there wasn't data to back it up. But I know that these charges have been leveled against him. And so now when you see this guy, and you know the background of how fake he is about, you know, just this whole idea about him being this, you know, visionary genius is all completely, it's just he's a lifetime actor. He's been set up to be a technical geek so that we give him like trust. And now we're in once, now we're not in computers here, we're in vaccines. But gee, golly whiz, Bill is such a technical guy. He's so smart. We're just going to go along with it, right? What the heck? Why not? Sure, Bill. Roll up my sleeve and just give me the jab because I trust your technology.
Well, it's interesting because what he did was he establishes this foundation, which the oligarchs always do this as a way to avoid taxes and also engage in social change through a tax-free foundation. There's the his $50 billion, he donated $50 billion to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation so he can avoid the capital gains tax on it. So then he takes control of the foundation. So he's still in control of the $50 billion, but hasn't been taxed on it. Then he uses that largesse to corrupt and buy up an already corrupted medical and scientific community because you just control their behavior through grants, and scientists are just as greedy as anybody else. And they got to pay the bills, keep the lights on, and pay for groceries. So it's easy to buy up scientists. That's not so much an example of objective, brilliant scientist advising Bill Gates on things. It's him telling scientists what to do, and that's what that's where you get someone like an Anthony Fauci or Deborah Birx, who are now on Donald Trump's task force on the coronavirus. They have deep connections to Bill Gates, and Fauci's on the board of governors of the Gates Foundation, which is involved in promoting vaccines. So they're in a position, and Bill Gates himself has heavily invested in pharmaceutical companies. So he's in the process of using the Gates Foundation. He's actually donated money to the National Institute of Health, Department of Infectious Diseases, the department that Anthony Fauci runs. Then Anthony Fauci is on the board of governors of the Gates Foundation. At the same time, he's also donated money to the World Health Organization, along with a lot of the funding from the World Health Organization comes from pharmaceutical companies, which Bill Gates is heavily invested in. And these are governing bodies. These are regulatory, in many ways, supposedly public health institutions, and they're guiding policy. They're controlling the narrative. They're providing the facts by which these policies are being implemented that turn around and benefit Bill Gates because they create a market for these vaccines that turn around and end up paralyzing 500,000 kids at a shot. I mean, just look at it. And just the fact that someone like Fauci would have direct financial ties to Bill Gates, I mean, there is a serious conflict of interest here, you know?
Of course, there's a conflict, but there isn't a conflict of interest in the sense of, like a litigatable action that someone's going to call them on because they have so much political control that they define the rules. I mean,
Bill Gates Foundation has even donated money to like media outlets.
Sure.
So they control the narrative of news information.
So, but the public should just be horrified and outraged that they would ever use Gates as a spokesperson for a vaccine,
Well,
particularly after they've just hoisted this fake pandemic on us. I mean, look.
remember, yeah, Event 201 in October. Then there's that Netflix series, Bill's Brain or something, where he talks about this. What are the odds of that happening?
Right. I
Just
mean,
like,
so you can see the structure of the personality they're trying to roll out to be able to hit us with mandatory vaccinations. One scenario is that okay, you can come out of your house, but you have to have the mandatory vaccination. And the mandatory vaccination will be because it's a specialty of Bill Gates, Tim. It'll be if nothing else, it'll create sterility, right? There is just, I mean, when did he have a vaccine that didn't accidentally create sterility? Going through the list that Robert Kennedy produced, I just can't think of any.
Well, here's an interesting thing is since Bill Gates decided to give half his money away, half his wealth to help humanity, he's gotten twice as rich. How does that work?
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, because his Federal Reserve Bank prints money whenever he runs out. So he can just do this. So it's
Well, I mean, let's say, okay, there was a time when those who said the government was going to put a microchip in you and track you, that you were a crazy conspiracy theorist. A few months ago, I think.
yeah, last week.
Last week, okay.
Yeah.
So this ID 2020, Bill Gates is what Russ Winter calls it, Mark of the Geek. Is he's come up with this high nano tattoo that's going
Yeah.
to track you to see if you've been a good boy, you've gotten all the mandated vaccines. And if you do that, you're able to leave your house and shop at an appointed stores at an appointed time, all this. So Bill Gates, this great guy, is proposing this. Now this puts him, he's like a Bond villain. Really,
Well,
right?
he's like a Bond villain that defeated Bond and took over the world. It's ridiculous. I mean, he's basically
So
going to
Bill
say,
Gates wants to chip you all. Just
right.
I'm
And
out
now,
there.
and
Okay.
just remember, gosh, how many times have I said on this show, Tim, that Endgame is basically perpetual intellectual stratification. The novel Brave New World by Huxley was not describing or warning something that's theoretical. It was a legacy piece of triumph. This is what they want to achieve. And so when you think about accepting mandatory vaccinations, believe me, what you're doing is accepting intellectual stratification, because you're going to find that the rates of autism are going to go up dramatically. But moreover, the percentage of brilliant kids in your genotype will at the same time head in the wrong direction on the bell curve. You're going to get fewer and fewer of those. So this is really what they want to do. This is what Gates is trying to achieve here. They will sterilize the vast majority. Those that remain will basically be only capable of servitude. And that is the that will then, and they will be able to leave their homes when their skin tattoo glows the right color, indicating they're current with their vaccinations. They can then go to Gatebucks and buy food, which is basically also part of the dumbing down and keeping their health from being, something that could ever be a thing that would rebel against, physically against the oligarchs. So this is the thing, is that the vitality, the strength of the population that this group lives with, they have focused on, and they've turned us into thought puppets in a number of ways, but most recently with the attack on us vis-a-vis the iPhone. I mean, think of the and the personal computer, think of the pornography, think of the false narratives, and just think of the time away from communicating with other humans and thought and reasoning. So
Think about that, what that public health administrator in LA said, that it's important that you avoid contact with other people.
exactly. Well, that's the thing. When you look at social distancing, you're really looking. I mean, look, how many times have we talked about they are breaking us down to individual units, because that's how you can create control. So they have to start with the ethnicity, then the family, then the sexuality, and now we're ready for social distancing.
Yes.
I was at the beach a couple days ago, and there's a little kind of platform overlook. It's made out of cement, and I wanted to see down the beach, and I walked up and tried and leaned past this woman. I was about 2 feet, 3 feet from her, I'd say. And she was, I mean, literally, she was terrified. And she screamed, 6 feet, 6 feet. And then went back and got on a bicycle. And I mean, she glared at me like I had, assaulted her or
It would have been
something.
funny if she had said 6 feet, 6 feet, and walked off the cliff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she's, I mean, but her eyes were absolutely terrified. The Corona horror film had gotten into her mind, and she was a thought puppet.
Yeah. And
This was
this is
a
this is
real life thought puppet, where, I represented 3 feet from her something that could damage her with a virus, even though I, you know, I'm not sick, don't cough, nothing, that somehow it was going to get out of me into her through her mask and her goggles, and she'd be dead in a few hours. I mean, it was just sad, you know.
And presumably she's not shipped yet.
Yeah, she will be. And she will be like, you see, yeah, this is what they want is for us to volunteer. We need the chip. We need the vaccination. I mean, Bill is there to help us, to tell us, you know, that this is technology that...
Well, this is the technology is. In the 20th century, you needed concentration camps, machine guns, barbed wire. And now they've just gotten in the... since then, they've gotten control of your mind. It's mind control. Psychological warfare is control of the mind. And this is where, again, the control of the narrative is so important. Why everyone has to do their part in just getting the word out that this is all BS.
Yes.
It's all BS. It's nonsense. It's, don't give them any credibility on this at all, and because it's such a fraud.
Promote anger among everyone you know when this thing turns around, because there's going to be this moment where it is going to be completely clear that the virus is basically a non-starter and all of this horror was just psychological, right? That was what we were thought puppets. And at that same moment, you're going to see the real horror of a nation without an economy.
Yeah, I mean, it has real impact. Every year,
yeah,
you know, as long as I can remember, we've had Easter dinner with 40, 50 people. And this year, we're not having it.
It's just horrible. I mean, it's just incredible that the people put up with this stuff and have not come to their senses yet. But let us hope that anger will cut through the power of the thought puppet apparatus, and people will see that, wait a second, where was the analysis or the thinking of what it was going to be like with no economy?
Mm-hmm.
The same people who made us frightened and gave up our economy because of the virus that didn't show up, they also forgot or overlooked to tell us what was going to happen when we got out of our homes into a world without jobs, right? That's the moment I'm hoping, Tim, that the understanding of what this group has done will produce anger. Because like you said, we have to have a political reaction to this. We have to. Heads have to roll.
Metaphorically, of course, right?
Yes. I'm not even sure these people's heads would roll if they were.
But well, they should feel the pain.
Yeah, by heads roll, I mean that they should no longer be in office. No one, when this thing is over.
The entire political establishment has been so
compromised. The entire political establishment should just, and the media, right? Mm-hmm. Don't leave them out. The CNN, Fox, everyone who promoted the horror porn and forgot to do an expose of what the nation was going to be like without an economy, all of those people, everyone has to go. We have to start from scratch. And I don't care what it takes to get to the point where we can actually start to rebuild from ground zero, but we have to get there. And of course, in the way between us and the anger is the vaccine, which will also deal with anger. That'll go away too, as well as your capacity to have children and to think clearly. So I will personally not line up for the jab, but I am definitely going to line up for righteous anger and an attempt to remove the political and media and financial classes.
I'll make
the thought puppets.
I'll bring the feathers, and you can be the tar, and then we'll.
I'll bring the tar, buddy. I got money, but out here on the beaches. Yeah, so it's going to be another really rough week, and all it's going to be a rough week of like going to the store and watching the thought puppets in their misery and in their confusion. But I know we're not far away, Tim. I know we're not far away
from... Well, a big part of this is humiliation. It's a big part of mind control is humiliation. So when you see these ridiculous rules, there's a reason for it. They want to make life as inconvenient and as uncomfortable and as maddening as possible. It's right out of, Tavistock with shock doctrine and these things. And they're intentionally imploding or damaging the economy. To what extent depends on what their objective is, and to what extent they get kickback, or maybe a faction within this group decides not to go as far as another faction wants to go. I don't know. I don't go to the parties. I'm just trying to watch the situation. I'm watching the political rhetoric, and I'm seeing the narrative change, which suggests they probably want to emerge from this. But when they do, don't let them control the narrative. Call them out. Don't be thankful that they're letting you out of your house and back to your job.
Yeah.
If you have one.
Or there are no jobs.
And don't be thankful for the $1,200 check you may or may not get.
With money that's completely invented out of thin air.
Yes.
That will also eventually damage all of the real wealth that any of the poor people out there have had a chance to save and create. Oh man, it is going to be such a mess when we come out of these little, thought puppet capsules and into the world without money, because, we don't know how to live like that. Americans don't know how to live like that. We have lived on the fruits of financialization, on the fake world, fake money, fake economy, really since 9/11, since 2008. But for 10 years, there hasn't been a real economy. It's just been financialization. There's a real economy, but it wasn't what was actually creating what appeared to be, a wealth situation. And Americans are about to walk into the third world, And what we have is hopefully education and awareness of the fact that it was done to us. So,
yes.
Tim, I hope that next year you'll be able to have Easter dinner again with your family, and I also hope there's food on the table.
Oh, we could, just that the people have acquiesced. I'd be willing to meet, but
yeah, it's funny. Like we have, friends who are kind of like-minded, and we just have them over. We don't care.
Yeah,
So we've had dinners, and I will say there's a little less hugging and touching because people are frightened, But we've really gone out of way to not have to not succumb.
Well, I went on I was at work today, and the guy I met with, shook my hand. I was glad to shake his hand. So,
yes, that's right. I've got a few communications where people say, well, I have to tell you that our next door neighbors and us, we had a hug session.
underground hugging.
Hugging is now the
Anthony Fauci said he may never shake hands again. Apparently, he said that. Now,
good.
Again,
good.
This is supposed to be the scientist who's.
Because one thing, Tim, is like, think of all of the damage. Ron Paul was talking about this in one of his videos he did. That, when you're inside, you're damaging your health. When you're away from your social circles, you're damaging your health.
Mm-hmm.
People are going to come out. They're going to be suffering.
It's my point, it's so obvious. How are people so buffaloed in thinking that getting out in the sun and not exercising is good for your health?
Yeah,
but that's even sound advice.
They have these lockdowns now where some people can't even leave their homes.
Yes.
They have to wait for the government to bring them food. I mean, what is the next one? And of course, I also saw this one WHO monster talk about, we may need to go into people's homes.
Oh, that Irish doctor, Ryan or something. Michael Ryan, yeah.
Yeah, to remove individuals who are... Yeah, I tell you what, buddy, come into my home and let's see what you can remove, But this is they're kind of testing the limits of the fascism just to see if there is any kind of response. I think they're actually surprised that there isn't more reaction. So they're kind of probing to see do we have a completely docile slave population now, So I'm expecting this next week that it'll be, they can't, like, I don't think they can pull the this is horror show week on us one more time, can they?
I don't think that's going to happen.
I think it could be 2 weeks in a row that are...
They had the
one guy saying, I don't know if you saw me, I think he's the Surgeon General, he's a black guy.
Oh, yeah.
This is our 9/11. This is our battle of the bulge. This is our moment, this week. I mean, what a pitiful thought puppet. And then, of course, it was just at the end of the week, it's like, well, the models are wrong.
Sorry, got it wrong. Yeah.
Sorry.
It's a wrong.
Sorry. But
I forgot to carry the two. I'm sorry.
we kind of screwed the model up a little bit.
No, but it would have happened.
Well, this is... Without our lockdowns, we'd be all dead at this point. Their
So rate fair check,
credibility.
by the way, 25-30% unemployment, rate fair check, and don't complain. We need unity.
Right. That's the message, you know. And then Trump will get out there and talk about what heroes the Americans are for sitting in their homes starving to death.
Yes.
I mean, it's just ludicrous. So I'm coping that they can't pull that one again. And if they try to keep the draconian lockdowns much longer, people will start to notice that it isn't much fun having to be like, they realize if this keeps up, they won't even, they'll be like only able to be under their desk, right? It was, you know, we could walk to the store, then we have like to the corner. Now we can't leave our house. You know, they're talking about coming and getting the kids. I mean, at some point they would start to see that, well, maybe this isn't like a really reasonable process that the government's in. And perhaps think about, well, gee, maybe we should not obey. And when that happens, this would be great. You know, if there is a kind of a movement that sweeps through the cities where people say, the hell with this, we're going back in the street, arrest us, you know, and if it's spontaneous and if, you know, humanity gets out there and just says, the hell with the government, the hell with this crap, we're out on the street.
Well, the moment that you that would happen, it'd be over because you can't enforce it.
Yeah, and exactly right. And the thing is that because they, I just don't know. We talked about this a couple weeks ago about, well, how long can the horror porn work? I thought if that at the end of this week, you know, at the end of the Battle of the Bulge, you know, 9-1-1, this is the crescendo. We've got everyone manning, you know, the forts and everything. You know, I thought if it collapsed, and the models kind of suggested it would. You know, we talked about this that it looked at a lot of ways that it was actually going to the virus, what little virus activity was, it would start to decline. So since that in fact happened, I don't think they can gin up the horror porn one more time. And so now they're probably going to be talking about soon. We don't know when, but soon we're going to get out, you know. Mm-hmm. Soon, it won't be increased surveillance. You know, they'll start to maybe loosen up a little bit on the fascist police force that's like arresting grandmothers who are walking dogs and stuff, you know. Maybe that stuff will start to ease up a little bit. I don't know. But let's hope that at some point that the people rebel and that we decide that, you know, we just don't want to be told what to do. We followed your orders based on this information. You were wrong. I'm not saying you lied, but you were wrong. So we gave up our rights. We gave up our freedom, lost our job. You know what? I don't need your permission to go outside of my house and walk my dog, right? This is just me as a human being. I'm just going to do it. And if enough people do that, doesn't take that many, well, it's over. And this, they see, and then hopefully the fact that the people acted and weren't just, you know, allowed to leave their homes, the fact that the people actually acted will start to change the psychology so that we can resist, you know, some of this propaganda.
And I don't want to hear any non-mea culpas from people like Tucker Carlson and other those who pushed the fear and now are worrying about the economy because they facilitated it.
They should have worried about this earlier, shouldn't they?
Yeah.
So he's someone who should just resign. I mean, you should just this little piece of work should, you know, his father's CIA. Mm-hmm. They should just say, you know, hey, I just read what they told me to read. Sorry, it wrecked everyone's life. I'm resigning. Mm-hmm. That would be dignified. I would respect that. Get the hell out of there. Let them bring some other, you know, automaton of the Brave New World up, but somebody, a new face, because the trust in all of these people should be gone. Fauci, Trump, you know, the whole political class, mm-hmm. all the media, the trust that which is what they use to manipulate us, that should be over.
So I heard that just before this, Nancy Pelosi bought a whole bunch of Amazon stock. So,
you know, I mean, I really, there should be like a mutual fund that just I track politicians' purchases and sales.
I think we should, other side of this, to be someone do some financial investigating, some
it's almost
forensics.
Like they know what's gonna happen. Yeah. Oh, it's amazing, you know, isn't it? Yeah, so let's hope we have a better week, Tim.
Yep.
I just want to tell you, it's a great pleasure to be able to talk to you because, like I say, there's just not enough people willing to, be critical about what's going on, and it's just psychologically difficult, you know, mm-hmm. to have no, just to be in a room of social distancers and you're all alone. It's a very weird experience, you know. So,
okay, Joe.
Hey, Tim, thank you so much. I will talk to you next week.
Enjoy the rest of the weekend. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.